They are both at the gate. The Lord wants you to know that you are at the gate. The gate is access and opportunity. Oh, y'all will hear me. That your life doesn't have to be routine. It doesn't have to be normal. It doesn't have to be ritualistic. That you are living the life you expect. If you want more, you can have more. If you believe for more, you can get more. If you want abundant life, you can have abundant life. But when you make a routine out of being miserable, when you make a routine out of complaining, some of y'all are so used to being dysfunctional and angry and frustrated. When you say something nice, you almost scare the kids. Say, I'm happy today. What's wrong? Is happy unusual? You mean you are lame at the gate? Don't get mad at me, because I'm walking through my gates. Ain't no need in you writing, hating, tweeting, or anything else, because I'm going to walk through every gate God gives me. I'm not too old. I'm not too late. I'm not too fat. I'm not too black. I'm not too nothing. If God brings a gate in front of me, excuse me, I'm going in my gate. Somebody make some noise. Tell three people, say, go through your gate. Go through your gate. Go through it.
Around, cause there's a reason to rejoice, you see.
Everybody look up and feel the hope that we've been waiting on.
Just listen to Power of Praise here on WEFT Champaign 9.1 FM on the dial for a brand new day.
Lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me wanna go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. It's many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest.
This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. And as always, I have to ask you, what's today's date? Today's the 27th. And as always, this is your weekly chance to hear stuff about the environment in our community and lots of other things that have been going on as well, including some Australian friends and Thanksgiving today.
Yes, and Thanksgiving is a very interesting time. So I went to be with Australian friends, and you speak Australian. Mm. The abbreviation is Strein, S-T-R-E-I-N, Strein. It's an abbreviation of Australian. And so we have a language. So there's a botanist there, Hal was there. I've known Hal for years and years, and so we could talk about Almont, who was the herbarium specialist that we knew, who was married to Mr. Jones, Dr. Jones, who was kind of a curmudgeon, but he did a lot of research in Allerton Park and things like that. And so just these conversations are good and interesting. And Cecil has taken a job with the Methodist Church on South South Duncan Road, and there's a little bit of prairie there. It used to be Burwash property, and there's a little leftover that could be prairie. So we talk about those sorts of things. Adult children, Patrick and Rosemary, were there, and they were playing charades. That was kind of nice, and a wood fire, and there was a lady with dog and laptop, and so sharing photographs and wonderful food and. Allows for an interaction. And part of what I've been trying to do with this program is to encourage people to interact and share. Sometimes it's a little embarrassing because if you share too much, you can realize that you're sharing too much. But you have to play that risk. If you don't know people very well, you have to get to know them. Sometimes you know people for a long, long time and you've forgotten where they fit in, and that's interesting. I'd walked to Church Street in the afternoon, and that was rather nice because you get to see the buildings that are there, and some of them are going to come down because the school district has decided to expand Central High School, and the vote was in favor of that, and the buildings are already starting to come down. I didn't walk back. I was given a ride back, and I was rather glad to do that because if you're a little older and you're walking through strange places, you can get mugged, and so that was a good and safety thing. So I had walked because I looked at my car and the front tire was flat as a pancake, And that led me to another thought. The next day I got a can of gas and pumped it up, and it stayed up, and took it to the Goodyear station that I've known for years. And we've lost Warren there just recently. He passed to cancer, and you think of him at this time. But the tire is older, and it has cracks, and it's not safe to do that. And we don't have a lot of money, so we just try to do what we can. And I've been driving on that tire for a couple of days, and it's stayed up. You have to know that as the change of weather, then a little leaks out the aging cracks on the tire. Farmers market. I go to the farmers market. Sometimes I've been a participant where silkscreen prints and just talking about prairie and the like. And lately I've been walking around and talking to people, and so that I find interesting too. Ask people what they're doing with their trade. Where did they come from? How did they get into this? And all of a sudden you find out that you know exactly where they live and work and play. And so there was a gallow glass from the land and Goose Creek, and right near the land Weldon High School, and near our railbed that goes out to Clinton and passes Clinton Power Plant Lake and Weldon Springs. So we had a discussion, and you have to be careful when you talk to people that you don't get in front of their sale possibility. So as people come along, and at this time of year, it's getting busier. So you step out, go to another booth or two. Last week or two, we talked about sheep and horseshoes. So I talked to the horseshoe person, and I asked if he had a kiln. And no, he doesn't have a kiln, but he may have a kiln. And so that was friendly and interesting, and a little jocularity in there. And then I talked to a lady from Filigrove who works with steel, a sheet mill, and carves out an image of a bird or a duck or a person. I asked if she could weld, and oh yes, you can weld in both electrical welding and oxyacetylene welding. But she's found that it's better to get the metal cut by laser beam, because it leaves the metal a little smoother on the outside. So you can put your hand around the edge, and it's nice to be able to do that. So she draws what she wants to have cut and has it cut. She comes from Villa Grove, and so she knows the railroad beds there and the Methodist Church, which has a little prairie behind it, and the high school. And is she on the floodplain? Oh, yes, she is on the floodplain. It's been filled in. So we talk about that. And then around the corner is Queen Anne's Lace, and she's also in the Camargo, Villa Grove area. That means it's a little bit further south of Villa Grove. And
I actually know her. She has soap that she makes using goat's milk. And I actually buy my laundry detergent from her. What she does, she takes all her little leftover pieces of soap, grinds them down into detergent-sized, you know, particles, and puts them into containers.
Well, see, that's wonderful. That's the sort of thing that I want to encourage.
She's English, British at least. Uh-huh. She has an accent. She doesn't sound like you, though.
But, yes, well, I looked at, she was at another venue. So her husband was there, and he knew me when Brown's glass was, Brown's paint was where Radio Maria is, just around the corner. And so that must be 30 years ago. And he knew that I'd been very concerned about a cemetery that's near to Villa Grove, and it is loaded with prairie. And it has recently been mown. And there are always people around who feel that cemeteries have to be mown. But this cemetery, and I'm forgetting its name, but it starts with J. And it's nearby people who have employment roots in land trust things. And they've been very concerned about this prairie. Some of it has been, it's this little cemetery. Some of it has been taken over by farming, and the tombstones set aside. But its soil has not been disturbed, and it is prairie there. And actually, mowing won't hurt it that much, provided it is allowed to come back to its own self. But somebody needs to be able to explain the importance of prairie when you're down to 0.01%. of the original prairie that's around you. You need that genetic material. And so we talked about that. And his son and daughter-in-law have a farm which is on the road to Camargo. And so I bought a sweet potato. Now, you're used to sweet potatoes, but sweet potatoes grow in a slightly warmer climate. And the sweet potato that I have is a rather large sweet potato. Well, I grew up with sweet potatoes, and the theory was that the larger, the better the potato. So you may have a 5-pound or very large sweet potato. But then you have to consider that our climate is not a semi-tropical climate. It's going to have a shorter growing season, so the sweet potato is smaller. It's convenient also to have a smaller sweet potato because you can prepare a sweet potato so that you can manage a half of it or even a whole sweet potato. So we talked about that some, and the young folk were putting away their last produce. Some of the produce Carrie has pulled out of there. It's hard to keep projects going through the winter, so we talk to people about greenhouses and the use of greenhouses. Prairie Moon was, Blue Moon was there, and they have greenhouses, and they try to keep kale and other things like that going during the winter. That's very nice to wander and talk and reminisce to some extent. Younger people don't have as much to reminisce about because they haven't done certain things yet, but they too can bring an energy that might be children working with their cell phones and enjoying the exchange between each other. And so you can fit into that a little bit, but perhaps not altogether. That I met up with Susan, and Susan has been writing a book, a family book about their farm on Long Island, and her brother has just passed, and she's left with the responsibility for working with this book. And David will understand this. Susan has been a professor of English as a second language, so she has no problem putting things together. But David H. Was there. We sat together at a table, and we discussed what Susan could do with this manuscript that has obviously been scanned and the photographs scanned in. And so how does she work with this revisions on this manuscript that is perhaps two-thirds finished? One of the things is that if you want to do this, computer publishing is much more flexible in many ways. If you have a page 71 and a page 72 and it doesn't quite jibe because you put some more information in, you can put the two up on a larger screen. So the first thing is that if you have a laptop and it has capacity, you can go to a larger screen. And I really applaud Susan for this, because not always, as everyone, including myself, computer literate to the point of what you do. Well, so David, a different David, was saying that he deals with databases, and he understood the program, and he also has one foot in English as a second language, so he knows Susan very well. And his suggestion was that you get two hard drives, probably going to cost you about $70 each, and store the information on. So did Susan have the CDs or the copy of this manuscript? Well, she'd come away fairly quickly, and she wasn't sure she'd put the CDs in her dilly bag when she came from the East. So she's going to have to get hold of the relatives so that she can get the database. So then those were two major suggestions. Was one, a larger, narrow computer screen. That means she could tie it into the laptop. If the laptop has enough power, you can do it. Susan goes to the Abana Free Library and can use those computers. But with this sort of work, you often have a thought or an idea when you're at home. So she should have something at home. Then the question is your computer as friendly as it might be? If you don't have a keyboard, you have to run your finger around, and that is not quite so easy to use as a keyboard. So next thing is to get a keyboard and attach it. And then might be one thing you might want to do is to get a computer that is has a large screen intact, and it may have a more sophisticated computer than is on your laptop. So we're thinking about these things, and I have to applaud Susan's bravery to get into this and to do it. Then in that whole atmosphere, you need a computer geek. And you need someone like David sitting across from me who helps me, because he knows which button to push. And if I don't know that button, then it's going to take me an hour to find this. And I get there, but it wastes a lot of time, and it takes away your ambiance or your creativity or the excitement that you go into the computer with. So we have some suggestions for Susan, and that's rather wonderful, because you need these little histories. That history might go into an archive for 20 years and nobody will find it. But then somebody will find it and go back to look at it. And WILL has gotten into this a lot. They beg you to bring your 8mm photographs, movies, even if you have never recorded who's in the movie and what. You can see by the dresses, by the hair, the jeans, the shoes, the actions, the words. You can put that in a certain era and give other generations an opportunity to enjoy. So we're encouraging Susan. She's got to get hold of the family and figure out who did the screening of the manuscript. And he is in hospital, so then you have to do the best you can. So the rest of the family may be able to help. So a little bit of delay at the moment, but the people on the other end who would like to receive this book probably by Christmas don't conceive sometimes the amount of work it takes to put this into action and to have it in a format that is less expensive. If you're going to do a computer publication, you can do 10 copies and you still have the record, and you can do another 25 if somebody wants. If you're going to put it on offset press, you need to know how many copies you're going to have ever. So are you going to have a basement full of 250 books and you only distribute 25? Then that can be costly and sort of permanent. But we also have to think about how you archive this. You have a book, but bless me, these days people are living in smaller apartments but higher price, and they like to get their books from the internet because they can't have 10 bookshelves with all the legal documents that they have that associated with their family. So especially if you go to Japan and China and places like that where the apartment might be expensive and small. So computers can help, but you have to know that the city of Champaign has just voted to not put all their information on the computer because the fiber optics that join the computers are going to be very permanent. They're not breaking down in 10 years, but the engines that are on either end that send the information can be out of date within 10 years. So the city of Champaign has voted to have to record and store with probably the Banner Free Library hard copies. And that means space, that means warehouses, that means that you also have to be generous enough to put a summary of your material into the store boxes so that people can come. Now, we have that sort of problem. I'm talking about 10 different things today, and how do you list that? How do you list it so people could go through it quickly and facilitate people coming with a hard drive, and they want 25 copies of what you were talking about, and they're going to take it away with a hard copy. So you have to have a hard copy, an electronic copy, and the Urbana Free Library does a very good job of doing this. There are several libraries. Not all libraries have this capacity. Not all libraries have had people who have had the temerity to record city council meetings, to record county meetings, to fish up all the data and put it on the computer. So that to me was interesting. We spent probably a couple of hours doing this. And I don't know, David might have a comment to add to that. He's been very helpful in my situation because he goes slowly enough that I can understand. He teaches me how to do things that are simple enough that I can do them.
In the right around year 2000, I had to have my arm twisted to start teaching people how to program computers. Part of it was I wasn't sure you're not. Not everyone would make a good teacher, and I wasn't sure that this, you know, especially this is going to be college level. But one of the great things I discovered from letting my arm get twisted and teaching out at Parkland for several years is how many different ways there are for people to learn. They talk about how you can be an auditory or a visual learner. That's really a course description, you know, two very different ways. But even within that, you can explain something to somebody. This happens to Dave and I all the time. Dave loves the word link. I always have to walk him backwards whenever he says, okay, I want to make a link here. And it's like, okay, Dave, what does it mean this time? And eventually we figure it out. And sometimes I would even use the word link for what he's talking about. But it's, I don't know if it's Socrates, you have to define your terms going way back to Greek times.
Computer language is different from regular language
sometimes. Yes. And one of my favorite things, I got invited to a party decades ago with a bunch of vet med students, and they were standing around and they were talking about the intricacies of AI. Now, to computer people, that's artificial intelligence. And here's a bunch of vets to be, standing around talking about, you know, complexities and, you know, AI. I had to wonder, why on earth are these people who are going to work with equines and dogs and cats and fish and birds and whatever, why would they care about artificial intelligence? Well, it turns out, to vets, AI is artificial insemination. And so you have to define your terms. Once I understood what it meant to them, if I'd wanted to, I could have discussed artificial insemination with them. I didn't have much reason for it, but so we didn't. But yes, you can't go into things assuming that you know what that you know what they're talking about, and vice versa. Once you get past that hurdle, learning is usually much easier. It's not going to be flawless. You can still take a bit of time, but it goes faster once you know you're talking about what they're talking about.
You have to know that there are several ways of doing the same thing, and you have to have a sense of humor about not succeeding with one aspect and getting it with another aspect. So it doesn't help to get frustrated with computers.
Yes.
You just have to work there. But you also have to keep your head going, so you have to exercise. You can't sit there by 5 hours at a time doing your exciting book. You have to get to a point where you can move. You go out for a walk, and that's healthy. And as you get older, you also have to think about food so that you have less... less sodium and less sugar and less fat sometimes. So that means you have to have a bodybuilding mind at the same time too. So I walk around the West Side Park, for instance, and I'll talk about that a little later. But David H., who is with me and Susan, is also a database person. And databasing is something that you have to do what David here is saying about knowing each other. So if he's working with people who are in transportation, he needs to know a little bit about the thing that you're talking about. So I deal with railroad beds because that's the only place where there's any prairie left. So I go to railroad seminars largely to get the language so that I can talk to railroad engineers. If we're going to bring recreational trains in from the Monticello Railroad Museum to Champaign, we need to be able to talk to railroad engineers. If we're going to move a bridge into a stream where the bridge was abandoned and dismantled, we need to find a bridge and know how to lift that bridge and put it down in the same place for a modest price, so that language is there. So talking and communicating is very, very important. And I think in an era when a lot of people are disenchanted with the fact that there are no jobs, means that they have to understand why there are no jobs. when you keep increasing the number of people and you have a philosophy of gross national product that depends on the people power growing each year, then that's not sustainable. So how do we talk to each other? How do we educate? You see, Castro has just passed, and he is being applauded to some extent for having educated his rather poverty-stricken people, who appreciate that very much because it puts them more on the same level. It's not we and they, and it gives you a chance to talk to people who might have a PhD, but then you need to use a computer. But then if you've been used to having a job where you have a shovel and you work and there are no jobs with shovels anymore, then you have to have that community college that David was talking about, where you get enough information to be a help in the internet and the computerized community. So David H. has suggested he might be able to come and help us define what is the creativity of putting down a scenario, a block of information, which is like an index. So I've been putting down acronyms, but if I'm not here anymore, then the acronym may not mean anything. It's like David's saying, whether it's artificial insemination or something else. So the computer person needs to know enough about your environment to be able to make suggestions, and David might come and help us some with that. I went around to the art co-op, and the art co-op at this time of the year, every year, has a show that's organized to the Humane Society. So all sorts of artists are invited to donate a picture, and the buyers know that the funds are going to go to the Humane Society. Well, it's a wonderful little gallery, and all sorts of people are there. I enjoy it each year. Some of the pictures are tiny pictures, 2x2, and some of them are very large, and they have character. And there again, we're communicating with people who you lose some of the artists who grow old and pass on, and you gain some of the younger ones who are doing different things and orienting to different things. It might be, I was just looking at an aerial shot that was looking down on the fields. Well, that means you have to have been in a plane, or you have to use the sky, or your imagination of the sky, and that becomes a piece of art. There are gaming people there. There's a gaming institution, and David knows about this. He's a board game person, and that's different from a computer gaming person. So there they were, playing games and enjoying themselves. I went to West Side Park. I sit at the computer for a while, and then it's time to exercise. So as I go to the park, I look at the level of the lawns. The lawns at this time of the year are not growing. And do they need to be mown? Well, yes and no. We have a contract mowing, and the whole idea is to pay someone to mow your lawn once a month. But lawns don't grow like that. They grow in the spring and don't grow very much in the summer, and then grow again in the fall. And you really need a contract that goes with the amount of growth. So I see a lot of mowers out at this time of year giving the last haircut, but it's because they have a contract to mow for once a month. And so I stop and look. But there's another thing. There are leaves. So the West Side Park has lots and lots of leaves. And one thing that modern mowers can do is they can blow the leaves into stacks. So they could also mulch. So at this time of the year, they're taking those leaves and chopping up in little pieces that will not deny the grass underneath. And I don't think they mow very tight. They lift their mower up to give the grass a chance to have enough photosynthesis to survive. So I walk around Westside Park and I take photographs of a yellow carpet of ginkgo leaves. And then I look at trees that have seeds on them. Sometimes the seeds don't fall off quickly, like the redbud. Sometimes the trees are big and substantial and characteristic, and you can see the other structures of the park, like the sculpted piece behind them. Then there are trees that have been struck by lightning, and you can see where they have been repairing themselves. And you can see where a tree has been taken out, probably struck by lightning, and it has to be replaced by the younger tree. You can see the magnolia trees that have been growing for years and years, and they have dead spots and holes. And so one of the things that I'm saying to you as a broadcaster is communication is not necessarily just with person to person. Often it is just you walking through the Pocket Prairie or walking through West Side Park and noticing what's there and what's changed. And why does this happen this way? And so sometimes we'll walk up to a mower person and ask what they're doing, why and where. And you have to understand that conversation is appreciated by the workers are doing what they're doing. Let me look to see what we've got here next. I use a script because we have to archive a script. Oh. Yes, last night there was a city Christmas parade. And it was amazing. It's been going for, I think, probably 7 or so years. They had something like 60 floats, 50 floats. And there were crowds that I've not seen in a long time, so many children. And they were sitting on the curb, rolling over, doing things that children do, hanging on to parents' hand or thigh, being carried around on the nape of a neck, or running here and there. And I thought that was rather wonderful. So I took some photographs of this. And the last element was a sleigh, and with reindeer pulling it that went up into the sky. It's a sleigh that's owned by the Kuhn family, or Dr. Youngerman is a derivative of the Kuhn family that set forth the Kuhn building, which was one of the earliest history buildings in Champaign. So they have this sleigh which can operate on the snow, but it's on a trailer, and Sandra is there, and that's the last item through. But there are all sorts of lights and people, and there's some giving out of candy. I'm not always sure about that. We give children a lot of candy, and sometimes there's too much candy, and it's not awfully good for your diabetes in the future. So we are cautious about candy, but there's obviously a lot of work into this, and the sympathy of the city council that provides vehicles too, and fire departments, park districts, different agencies that work with the community, and everyone gets a chance to share. And I would suspect there were at least 1,000 people at various places. It went from Main Street. It came onto Main Street near Reiner's cafeteria there, and came up Main Street and down Walnut and across to Neal Street and up Neal Street, and then I suspect to Washington Street and back to their assembly field that was behind Coon's store. So that was that's rather nice. How much time do you
have? 15 minutes.
Well, let me introduce you to something very different. It's the New Jersey Pine Barrens. I've always wondered about the Pine Barrens. It's in New Jersey. It's almost across from New York City. If you're on a tall building there in a clear day, you can look at the Pine Barrens. They drain into the ocean. They have a deep ponds. They were a place where people could hide, whether they were from the Underground Railroad or they were used for lumber. The forest was mainly pine, but the rivers going through allow for trees like cypress to grow, and cypress was brought in, and so this is not necessarily A1 natural, but it grows with sort of by itself because it's too wet to be filled in, although that was attempted at times. But one person in the middle late 1800s started to buy big acreage. This is probably thousands of acres, and he kept buying. So the industrial humanitarian part of New Jersey runs right up to the edge of this large acreage of pine barrens, and there are dirt roads through it, and there have been little towns in there. There have been places where people could come from overseas and feel at home because they were isolated from other communities. So you might have an Italian group or other groups settled there. And so there's an author here. His name is McPhee. And he's lined up with a guy whose name is Kurtzinger, who's a photographer. And they produced a book that is 1981. It's a while ago. The Pine Barrens isn't going to change. And there are a few little towns, very small towns, in the Barrens. There are individual houses in the Barrens that have no electricity and no running water, but the water in the Pine Barrens is often very, very clear. It does take on tannins from some of the trees, and so when it's not flooded, you can't really see the bottom of the lake. It's only about 12 feet deep, but when there's a rainfall and the water is moving out to the oceans, then you can see the bottom underneath. It's clear. And so boats sometimes would come up there, and so in the era of liquor prohibition, there were people who would store their contraband in the forest, and they would find their way through these rivers that fall off of a kind of hill that is a little more barren. So in the pine forest, you can be lost. On the hill, you can look over trees that are only as high as you, and you can look over the top of them. And you have wetlands and bogs, and it's a very, very interesting area. So this author would spend time in the Pine Barrens, and he got to know a guy named Bill Brown. And Bill Brown lived in a house by himself. He'd lost his wife, but the author knocked on the door because he needed to get some water, and so he was invited in, and he was observed to be perhaps a little hungry. So, would you like a chop? Would you like something to drink? Oh, yes. So they go out to the pump and they get water, but they also have a young guy there who doesn't say very much, but he travels with Bill, and I think it's Fred. Bill was the guy who was not very communicative, but between the two of them, they know every place in this town. They know where grandfather was, and grandfather used to go to that pub, and he would get drunk. And then one night, mother and daughter walked into the bar and took him by a shoulder on each side and let him out. And that was the last time grandfather or great-grandfather was in the pub. So there was the pub, and now it's decrepit, and you can even hardly know that it is there. But these people were experts in knowing a very little territory very well. They were not perhaps well traveled to France or Germany or Africa or where other places, but do they know the local situations? They know farming that is in there too. It's cranberry bogs, and so they harvest cranberries, and that's a whole nother story. You can have a canoe and ride around on the water. You can have a very narrow road to the point that there's no cars, but then there is a car, and you can crash because you have hills and dales, and you don't always know that something's coming. So this house, this old farmhouse with boxes around for cranberries and other things like that, look to be almost homeless, but they're not. There's people that really know about this territory. They know the animals. They know the fungi. They know the areas that if you went into those areas, you would be lost for a week because you wouldn't be able to know which way to get out. So we encourage those sorts of people who pick up on a one site and know it well and then can interpret to others who do come in. But you have to be very wary that there's always someone hanging around who would want to fill the area with 250 million tons of gravel and put buildings on it. So we have to be very, very cognizant of the people who have bought it, perhaps for other reasons. The Wall, I think it's Walden, Wharton. Wharton is the man who bought up many thousands of acres. And his thought was to dam up the rivers and provide water for New York and Philadelphia. So, but in the long run, the local government bodies decided that this was not for them. They wanted to preserve the Pine Barrens and did so. And Wharton passed on, but he's left a legacy for the Wharton Forest that is here. I haven't read it all because I don't have a lot of time for reading, but it's nice to find such a book at the Books for Prisoners. That's where I found this book. And as I go through my belongings, I came across it and read there. The roads are dirt roads, and as I was saying, there are cars, and so this building has 9 vehicles around it. And the author said to Fred Brown, what about all these cars? Well, every car that was there had been a friend of that owner over the years. It's had something it pooped out, and he had to have another car. And each car is a memory, and so it may have lost its headlight or what have you. But there's a history in those cars, and he would know what a square block was, or an L-shaped block, or a more modern car, and that to him was history and part of his history. And he also needs to know how to harvest from that forest. There are still lumber mills. The cypress trees provide lumber that is very preserved. It can be in water for a long time and not decay. So how do you select these trees? So this man knows when trees started to grow, and now they're 30 years old, and they perhaps can be harvested, or perhaps not. So he becomes an advisor to the natural history organizations that come in and find organisms and microorganisms and birds and small mammals that you wouldn't find otherwise, and he knows where they are. He knows their feces. He knows what they're eating. So here is a wealth of information, and we have those sorts of people who are in all communities. Sometimes they have a background from, we're getting there. So is it my background from Eastern European or from Africa? There are different people who pick the elements that are there. And I think we have to say, have an interesting season through Christmas and in the cold of the new year. And we have to say, this is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. As always, the views and opinions expressed here are solely those of the speakers and nobody else. I'll also put in a quick mention that our donation letter for the holidays has gone out. I got mine in the mail yesterday. And this is not a pledge drive, so we don't even have pledge drive forms. The calling, we couldn't actually take your take your pledge if you called. What you can do is, of course, return in the envelope that is included in the letter if you've received it.